Hi, I'm Malcolm.
Hello, everybody. My name is Harris Pick.
Yeah, my name is Miles. I go as Miles from Home.
I'm Justine Tyrell, R&B artist.
And you're listening to Background Noise, the coolest Canadian music podcast.
Thank you so much for tuning in to Background Noise today. My name is Tora, and I am so stoked for today's episode. I was listening to the songs before the show, as I always do, and I am just so pumped to talk about these songs. I'm gonna put out a forewarning here. A pit might open up in your living room. You might start pushing your kids. You might start pushing your coworkers, but it's all in the name of metal. So it's gonna be awesome. We're chatting with Graham from 13 Goats. Just this absolutely killer metal band from Vancouver. They're so tight. And honestly, I'm obsessed. Right out the gate, I always like to get the show started. I'll just let you, Graham, tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of your shtick.
Sweet. First of all, thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm really stoked to talk to you and to everybody listening out there. Hello, my name is Graham Miles. I am the frontman and one of the founding members of 13 Goats out of Vancouver. We are kind of a death thrash groove band, really influenced by a lot of old school American death metal, but we've progressed into some different arenas as our sound has evolved over the last two records that we've put out. The first record, Servants of the Outer Dark, came out in 2022. Our second LP, Capricorn Rising, dropped last summer in July 2024 on Exodus Stratagem Records. And we are currently working on our third full-length release, which we are hoping to get out sometime in 2026. Yeah, we've had a couple of lineup changes along the way, but I started the band with a guy who has since become one of my best friends in the world, Rob Fitzgerald. He was a dude that I met on Craigslist when I was not working actor, going through a pretty messy divorce, and I was just feeling really directionless. And so I kind of hit this wall where I was like, well, what have I always really wanted to do? You know, what did teenage Graham really want to do with his life? Fuck, I want to be in a metal band. So I looked on the internet and I was like, who else wants to do this stupid thing? And I found Rob, and he had written this ad where he was like, I'm looking for guys who aren't afraid to play hard, fast, challenging music. And so I sent him an email and he asked me for a little like video of me playing. I sent it over and he got me to go over and meet him at his apartment. I love telling the story because Rob is like one of the nicest guys in the world. But when you meet him, he's like this big, broad-shouldered, barrel-chested dude. And he has this like kind of resting serial killer face. So he comes to the door and he's like, come on upstairs, let's jam. And I'm like, oh man, this guy's going to make my skin into a lampshade. But I got upstairs and immediately he introduces me to his wife and his cats. And they're all really, really sweet. And then he pulls out his guitar and he's just like the most talented guitar player that I've ever met in person. So from there, I think we knew that this was something we wanted to do, picked up the other guys along the way. Our drummer Leo has been with us for quite a while now. He's all the way from St. Petersburg in Russia, used to play with a band called Stalwart, who he still is kind of involved with doing some writing and production things for. So he brings a really different flavor to the group. And the three of us have been the band's primary songwriters from the get. Our bass player as well, Colton Hessian, he's a promoter out here in Vancouver. He's one half of Journeyman Productions, but you also might know him because he's the current touring guitarist for Opal in Sky, sort of deathcore band that's got a lot of attention on the internet in the last couple of years because they make a lot of really funny memes and videos. But they put out an album sometime in the last year, I think, and they've started to tour more extensively across the country. So we got to share Colton with them, and sometimes the scheduling gets a little bit hectic, but it's all chill. They're all really good guys, and we are really excited to see what they're accomplishing. So this feels like a really good time for everybody. But it's nice to have that connection, and it's nice that we've got a bass player who is like a really active musician instead of fulfilling the stereotype of kind of just like, you know, slacking and partying.
That is actually awesome. Let's talk about 13 Goats a little bit, and we'll start off. There's a little bit of like a, and I like this about your band, there's like a lore and a story behind 13 Goats, and you have like a character. Why don't you tell me a little bit about the lore behind 13 Goats?
Sure. I think in the very beginning, you know, like I said, I was just a guy who was going through a divorce, and Rob was just an auto mechanic who needed something to do, some kind of creative outlet. And we didn't think too much about it off the top. But as we started to form a band, we came up against this idea of like, how do you focus your creativity? You know, how do you give it a direction to go in that is unifying and satisfying to an audience? And like I said, I used to be an actor. I still am, actually. It's funny, since I joined the band, that side of my life has really ramped up as well, I think, because being in a musical project got me more comfortable in my own skin. So I've started to book some more some more TV work and stuff since then. But I did, you know, 2 degrees in fine arts in theater. One thing I really love about metal music is how naturally theatrical it is. It has this kind of larger than life quality. And a lot of the great metal bands, you know, Maiden, Megadeth, they have mascots and characters, and those characters kind of, whatever they're writing about, those characters show up and put their own like spin on it, give it their own flavor. So I knew pretty early on that we wanted to do something like that. The way that we conceptualized the mascot we ended up with was really funny, though. We didn't know what the band was going to be called at first, and we had gone through a couple of other names that we didn't like so much, and even played a show with one of them, but none of them really felt like they were sticking. So Rob and I went out to a bar, and we just got really loaded, and we started writing down evil sounding numbers next to evil sounding animals. So I think at one point we had like 7 snakes, and at another point we had 666 wolves, which I really liked, but it was going to be like hard to fit on a t-shirt. And then I think Rob said, what if we were 13 goats? And I kind of just chuckled, and then I was like, fuck, no, what if we were 13 goats? But then we started talking, and we were like, all right, well, what does it mean? People are going to ask. And so we had to sort of come up with, you know, with an idea to make it a little less arbitrary. And what we ended up coming up with was this one character who we call the Shepherd, who is kind of like our version of the Antichrist. He's a traveling sort of interdimensional evil wizard demon, and he wears this goat skull mask. And then because he's the Antichrist, he needs disciples. So he's got 12 demon goats, and they're his disciples, and together they're 13 goats. The idea for Shepherd actually was kind of a Stephen King ripoff, because at the time I was reading The Dark Tower, and I really liked the villain that Stephen King kind of keeps bringing back up in his novels, you know, Randall Flagg or Pennywise or the Crimson King or whatever. Stephen King has said that this is all sort of one character before, but, you know, he's sort of amorphous and shape-shifting. And I thought that was really cool, but we couldn't just rip off Stephen King. So we did the goat version, and that's who Shepherd is kind of supposed to be. You can see in our first single put out from the first record, Servant of the Outer Dark, is actually kind of an homage to that, and kind of a tip of the hat to the Stephen King world and the Dark Tower specifically. Our way of saying kind of like, thanks for the idea that gave us the mascot we have.
That's actually rad. I love that. Now, on the theme of goats and shepherds, let's talk a little bit about that 2024 album, Capricorn Rising. And I thought a good song to start off the show with would be Sign of the Goat. So why don't you tell me a little bit about that song and that album?
Capricorn Rising is a concept album, and it's a concept album about that shepherd character and the 12 demon goats, and sort of why they exist. Because in the beginning, you know, we were saying like, yeah, we're 13 goats and we have this mascot and we have this idea, and people were like, cool, like, where does that come from? What universe does that live in? And so we started writing this story about just a regular person like you or me who becomes so disillusioned by all of the shitty things that humanity is doing to ourselves and each other and the planet, you know, these endless wars and rampant inequality and social injustice. And this person becomes so twisted by this that he ultimately sells his soul to hell for the power to talk to animals. And then he raises the animals up into an army to try and take the earth back from humans and put it under new management. So Sign of the Goat is sort of the overture to that. You know, like in Wagnerian operas, the first song would be sort of like a summary of what's to come. And that's kind of what Sign of the Goat is. It's from the perspective of Shepherd and all 12 demon goats. And they're talking about how they're going to overrun the earth and, you know, and invite humanity to join them. And the ones who don't join them will perish because things have to change. And we need a different way of running the planet we all share. It was originally a collection of riffs that Rob had written from years ago before he met me. He had called it Face First Through Concrete, which I really loved, but we sort of worked with it over time, and we sort of made it fit the story that we were telling a little bit more directly. But a lot of those riffs in there that you'll hear are really, I think, some of the heaviest on the record. It might not be our most technically challenging song. There's a lot of groove and a lot of, like, I won't say slam, but like, I don't know. I think it goes hard, but also I have to say that because it's my band and it's our song. So
whether they enjoy it or not, we're going to listen to it right away here, because it does slam and I love it. I think it is a great song to kick off the album. We'll talk about some more of the songs in just a couple minutes here. But first, I want to spin Sign of the Goat. We'll be right back.
Background Noise is brought to you by Easy Noise, Alberta's newest booking service for independent musicians and venues. Check them out on Instagram at EZNOIZE. Get connected and make some noise. Now back to the show.
We are back. Thank you so much for tuning in to Background Noise today. We're chatting with Graham from just this absolutely killer metal band out of Vancouver called 13 Goats. Hope you liked that one. I thought that was a good song to kick off the show to. That was Sign of the Goat off of their 2024 album, Capricorn Rising. And I want to talk about another one of the songs off this album. I really did like, I'm a big fan of concept albums, so I really did like how conceptualized this album was as a whole. And one of the other songs that I was like, okay, this one goes hard, is A Wolf in Shepherd's Clothing. I thought that was also a great spin on the phrase as well. Why don't you tell me a bit about that song?
Wolf in Shepherd's Clothing is the moment in the story that we're telling across the record where the shepherd character sort of makes his pitch to the animal kingdom of Earth. And he goes like, we're here, we're going to do something crazy, like join me or die. One of the things that it's important to me to explain to people about the record is that like it is kind of a meditation on the nature of revolution. And we're not here to say it's good or it's bad. We're trying to explore why people feel the need to move outside of existing systems to change the world around them and what that says about themselves. Because I think we live in a time where a lot of people feel really disenfranchised and really underserved by their politicians, underserved by the institutions around them, whether those are academic or religious or cultural. There's a lot of people who are really angry, and there's a lot of people who think that the only way to fix things is by getting radical. I feel like a lot of us have been there as well. You know, a lot of us kind of like to go, oh man, the world would be so much better if only we could like, you know, force these people to pay higher taxes, or, you know, or on the other side of things, you know, some people have really like terrible, frightening prejudices against, against marginalized communities and use those as sort of lightning rods to whip up political anger. And so the idea of a political revolution, it's this thing that I think is universally appealing, but also potentially very dangerous. The shepherd character is not exactly supposed to be aspirational. You know, he's supposed to sort of speak to that part of all of us that goes, yeah, we should just like rise up and overthrow everyone and burn everything down and build something better in its place. But he's also supposed to be a cautionary tale, because to do that is extraordinarily difficult. And I think as history has shown us, you often just end up replacing one oppressive hierarchy with another. And that's not to say that like, that's not to say that revolution is never justified or never necessary or never warranted. It's just to say that like, when you decide violence is the only way to change the world around you, I think at the very least that comes with some kind of spiritual cost. And in this case, that spiritual cost is literal, right? We're telling the story of a guy who sells his soul to become a goat demon. But I think you don't have to look too far to see all kinds of examples of of people in our present time who are doing some less dramatic version of that. So A Wolf in Shepherd's Clothing is kind of this rallying call. It's supposed to be from the perspective of this character going like, hey, if you feel like you've been overlooked, if you feel like you've been abused, come and join me and we'll do something better. But there's also this like sinister hint of like, who are the kinds of people who feel overlooked and abused? And are they the kinds of people who you want in charge of the world? Right? Because sometimes those are people who have a lot of grievances. Sometimes those are people whose sense of indignation is not necessarily justified. It comes from entitlement or it comes from a darker place. Not here to preach, just here to sort of explore those issues on this track and across the record. But that's what that song's about.
Right on. And you know what? I do always love a song that goes that in depth. And that's why I like to have the show and to talk about it and to flesh it out a little bit more, because now the song has 10 times more meaning to it now that we know the story of the shepherd and kind of the concept of this album and so on and so forth. Now, I want to switch gears just a little bit, but also I still feel like it's on the same train a little bit. I want to bring it back to your 2022 album, Servants of the Dark. And I feel like the song really kind of fits this vibe that we're talking about, and that's Challenge the Executioner. Why don't you tell me about that song?
Challenge the Executioner was actually written entirely by Rob. He wrote the lyrics and the music to it in the early days of the band. We split lead vocals on that one. I've been doing all the lead vocals from Capricorn Rising onward, but on the first record, there's a couple of spots where we gave Rob the microphone because we really liked the sort of the quality of his voice. And because this one really felt like his song. And he wrote the lyrics about overthrowing a tyrant, you know, and it's supposed to be a little bit general, a little bit sort of open-ended as to who that is or why that is. I think a lot of the imagery in the lyrics is kind of medieval, right? There's like, you know, blood gushing down the mountainside and pyres burning and, you know, and crowds assembling to watch this like cruel overlord burn. But I do think that thematically, it's very much in keeping with where we ended up going on Capricorn Rising. And one of the things that we sort of continue to write about is power and the abuse of power. And maybe part of that has something to do with our roots as a band, because most of our members are from immigrant families from the Soviet Union or the former Soviet Union. Rob is Armenian and I'm Ukrainian and Leo is Russian. And so we sort of have that in our DNA. A lot of our families came here from a place where abuse of power led to violence and mass death. And we grew up hearing stories about that. And really, I think taking the political process in this country seriously, because we came from a place where, you know, where democracy was a fantasy. And so living here, it's like you never take that for granted, right? But also then seeing some of the stuff that's happened in North America over the last couple of years and worrying about where we're headed as a culture and how our political sensibilities are changing. So Challenge the Executioner is broadly just about burning a king you don't like. But I think that is a pretty resonant theme for 2025 as well. And certainly, you know, across Capricorn Rising, that is kind of what we're getting at, is like, why do people feel the need to rise up? Why do people feel the need to embrace radical change? And where does it lead? And is it always inherently good? Or can it actually turn you into the thing that you despise? Not a question that we think we have the answer to. We're just a bunch of dudes who play death metal, but it's a question that we would like more people to ask themselves, I think.
Absolutely. And I think that's the cool thing, especially with like, I find like metal as a genre, is metal bands aren't afraid to touch on that topic or to make people really think about it. So we're going to spin those two songs, A Wolf in Shepherd's Clothing and Challenge the Executioner. And I guess if you're not thrashing to it and not pushing your coworkers to these songs, think about what they mean to you. And then when we come back, you sent me a couple songs as well from some other just absolutely stellar metal bands. So I cannot wait to chat about those and spin them when we come back. We'll be right back.
Background Noise is brought to you by Easy Noise, Alberta's newest booking service for independent musicians and venues. Check them out on Instagram at EZNOIZE. Get connected and make some noise. Now back to the show.
Thank you so much for tuning in to Background Noise today. I hope you enjoyed those songs as much as I did. I thrashed pretty hard to them. They're good headbanging songs. That was A Wolf in Shepherd's Clothing off of 13 Goat's 2024 album Capricorn Rising. And then we also spun Challenge the Executioner off of their 2022 album Servants of the Outer Dark. But you sent me some songs as well from some other artists. This is always my favorite part of the show as well, is exploring new music. And so I can't wait to chat about them. And one of them you actually mentioned a little bit earlier in the show. This is one of your drummer's other projects, which is really cool. And even though he's kind of taken like a step back from the actual playing, I think you're saying he still does a lot in the producing, which is really cool. So why don't you tell me a bit about Stalwart?
Sure. Stalwart is a band that is still over in Russia. Leo was playing with them before he ever met us. And then, you know, he moved to Canada quite a while ago. So he doesn't play with Stalwart anymore because they're still over in Europe, but they're still in touch. They still write together. They still produce music. I believe that Leo actually mixes and masters their stuff now. And so we are always really psyched to see when they put stuff out because A, I think they're a terrific band, and B, it's a different aspect of Leo's songwriting that we get to experience because the way that he writes for our project is a little bit different. You know, I think we have a pretty distinct sound from Stalwart, but I do hear echoes in their music where I'm just like, yeah, that's like, that's our guy Leo. He's putting his stamp on it. It's got a more European flavor, I would say. I think Leo, you can tell sort of like some of the compositions that Leo's done for our band as well. Like on Capricorn Rising, Leo wrote Goats of War. He wrote Animal Kingdom. He wrote Global Fuck Up, the music for all those tracks. And then I did the lyrics. But for Stalwart, you know, it's him in a different environment. And there is this kind of like, it's very, you know, there's some symphonic elements to it. I don't know if we'll ever get a chance to play a show with these guys in person, but I think it would be really cool because I really dig what they're doing a lot.
That would be awesome. And you specifically sent me the song Come and See from them. So why don't you tell me just about your choice with that song in particular?
Sure. Well, I actually chose it because it's brand new. It's the latest thing that they've done. They've put out a couple of singles recently that I thought went really hard. I will be fully honest with you. I haven't listened to this one yet. So this is going to be a first time for both of us, but I'm really excited to hear it.
Awesome. Yeah, no, I listened to it before the show and I definitely get what you say where it has that like kind of European metal just does have a different flair. I don't know the word for it. I don't know how to describe it. I don't know if it's the double kick or even if they use like quadruple kicks. I don't even know. But it almost has that kind of like soil worky vibe to it. Another one that you sent me as well. And I love when you told me how you discovered these guys. Amnesia, you discovered them at a quote, secret barbecue. They're from Fraser, BC. Tell me a little bit about those guys.
Yeah, Amnesia is from the Fraser Valley. So that's like when you head out east of Vancouver and you're making your way towards Hope, there's all these like sort of smaller cities, Abbotsford, Chilliwack. That's the Fraser Valley. That's where Amnesia is from. These guys are young. They are like early 20s. Like I think one of them might be a teenager still, but they are so, so good. Just really wizards at their instruments, as far as I'm concerned. And so we got invited to play this event out on a farm in Abbotsford after our tour last summer. And we were kind of like, oh, do we do one more gig? Do we not do it? But we decided we were going to go ahead and do it. And it was really good that we did because A, we got to hang out with our buddies in Plague Doctor, another really cool band from that area. And B, we got introduced to Amnesia, who already knew about us. They kind of came up to us at the barbecue and they were like, hey, are you guys 13 Goats? And we were like, yeah, why? And they were like, oh man, we love you guys. And I was like, that's really flattering because I still think of us as like a very emerging, kind of very small band. But they were really excited to meet us. And then we stuck around and checked out their set. And these guys are killer. Like, I swear, all they do is sit in their basement and just like practice their instruments because they are so, so good. And their main guy has a real kind of like Chuck Schuldiner thing going on. I think you'll hear it when you put the track on. You know, he's doing a lot of their lead guitar work, which is really intricate and complex. He's singing over top of that. He has kind of like a Chuck tenor to his voice. I wouldn't say they're like a Death knockoff band at all, but I would say there are elements of Death's more progressive work, like symbolic through Sounds of Perseverance era, where you can really hear where Amnesia was sort of picking up from and going like, okay, let's take this and let's, you know, let's see how far we can push into the proggy aspect of like melodic death metal. Let's see if we can work in like some jazzy structures. And for me, just to see like, to see people so young doing this so well and so committed, it blows my mind, because at, you know, at 19, 20, I was not doing this. You know, at 19 or 20, I think I had just been kicked out of my, like the Guns N' Roses cover band I was in high school. You know, 13 Goats didn't start until all of us were sort of in our late 20s, early 30s kind of thing. So it's always really inspiring to see people who just know what they want right out of the gate and who are going out to get it and who are fucking getting it.
Right on. No, I love that as well too, and I couldn't agree with you more. These guys are so tight and so good, and honestly, hearing you say that, I can't believe how young they are too, because now I'm assuming they just sit in their basement and just speed riff all day until they get it.
And they don't sound quite like these guys, but do you know Psilosis?
No, I don't think I do.
Psilosis is like, some people would call them a metalcore band, but I think they're just kind of like melodic thrash band from the UK. And when they started, they were also like teenagers. But their first album, which is called Conclusion of an Age, if anyone's looking for disc recos from me, Conclusion of an Age by Psilosis is a fucking sick record. And those guys were like just out of high school. Or like Dustbolt from Germany, another killer thrash band who were teenagers in the beginning. Decapitated were also super young. So like, it doesn't always happen. You know, there's lots of bands who either start like we did when they're a little bit older, or who hit their stride when they're a little bit older. And I think if you look at like Carcass, you see that like early Carcass is really great, but the Heartwork era, when they were starting to get into their 20, you know, late 20s, 30s kind of, seems to be when they found the sound that then defined them for decades to come. So for a lot of, you know, what I'm saying is there's no right or wrong time to do it, right? Whether you're a kid or whether you're an old guy, like, or somewhere in between, the music finds you at the right time. You know, you have to be open to it. You have to be willing to go and explore these ideas that we were talking about earlier, and have the professionalism to like be in a band and resolve issues with, you know, with other people, and do all the professional things that come with musicianship. And you also have to like commit to learning and practicing your instrument and learning theory and stuff. And that's just like a kind of alchemy that either it happens when it happens, is what I'm saying. For these guys, it happened really early, and I cannot wait to see where they go from here.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think these guys are going to blow up. We're going to spin Final Cognizance from them. But before we do that, there's one more song we're going to chat about. This is, I think you were saying, a band from your producer on Capricorn Rising, which is really cool. So why don't you tell me a bit about them?
Yeah. So Matt Roach at Rain City produced Capricorn Rising for us. He recorded all the drums and all the vocals, and he gave a lot of really, really good feedback to us as we were DIing the guitars, and helped us sort of clarify some musical ideas that we had. I always like to say he's like Vancouver's Rick Rubin. I'm sure he's heard that a dozen times and he's probably sick of the comparison, but Matt is... he's a wild card, and he's a genius, and he's a very detail-oriented dude. So we were working with him on Capricorn Rising, and towards the end of the sessions, you know, there were a couple nights where it was just kind of me and Matt hanging out in the booth, going over like drum edits or looking at, you know, vocal harmonies or whatever. And Matt would go like, hey, I'm also working on a thing. And I'd go like, cool, can I hear it? Like, where can I go and stream it? And he'd be like, oh no, it's not out yet. We've been working on it for years. And I'm like, and you haven't released anything? And he's like, no, we'll release it when it's ready. And I was like, okay, man, like you're keeping me in suspense. But then he sent me like a couple mixes just after we had wrapped up our record. You know, I'd give him some notes, and it was kind of fun for me, because after he had produced our record and he had given us all this advice on what we were doing, I could kind of sit back and go like, ah, well, this is what I hear. And here's what I would encourage you to explore, which, you know, I have no business doing that to someone like Matt, because he's so smart and this is his bread and butter. Like, he does this all the time. But I was really flattered that he sort of asked me for a little bit of input. And then months and months later, suddenly Morgellons is dropping their first single, and I listened to it, and it's really fucking good. And it's a little bit more on like the deathcore end of things than, you know, than a lot of the stuff that I'm used to, but so heavy. And for me, because I'm not like a deathcore guy, so if you play a deathcore song and I really like it, I feel like, you know, it's good, because I like some deathcore, but it's like not the genre that I reach for. And I wouldn't say that Morgellons is like a down the line deathcore band. I would just say that they have some elements of that, but it's really well incorporated. And there's a big hook in the chorus for this. Like, to me, it's a very memorable track. It goes hard, but it also has that, like, you'll be playing the chorus in your head after you hear it kind of quality, which is a really important thing for us. Cause that's one of the things that I'm always trying to do with 13 Goats, is go like, how do we take something and make it thrashy, make it heavy, but also give you something that like a melody you'll be whistling afterwards, or like a hook that you'll remember, or like a lyrical turn of phrase that is going to get under your skin and stick with you. Because like theoretically, what we all want to do is make life-changing music, right? And I think that the key to that is to make music that like has staying power. So for me, this track certainly does. I hope you guys enjoy it. There is more to come from Morgellons, and I cannot wait to hear it.
We are going to spin one of their songs. I guess their newest, freshest one right out of the gates here. Reoccurring Formication. We're going to spin that. We're also going to spin Come and See from Stalwart, and then Final Cognizant from Amnesia. And then when we come back, we're going to bring it back to you guys a little bit and have a couple more songs we want to chat about before we wrap up the show.
From mine, in the arms of the flesh.
Background Noise is brought to you by Easy Noise, Alberta's newest booking service for independent musicians and venues. Check them out on Instagram at EZNOIZE. Get connected and make some noise. Now back to the show.
We are back. Thank you so much for tuning into Background Noise today. I hope you pushed your coworkers to those songs, opened up the pit in your living room. They are amazing. Honestly, this whole episode in general, while we have heavy and serious thought-provoking themes, at the end of the day, these songs just make you want to push people in a circle. And that is the feeling we long for. I want to bring it back to you guys a little bit and talk about one of your oldest singles, not the oldest one, but one of them, Unholy Mass. It was a 2022 single, but it was also on Servants of the Outer Dark album. But why don't you tell me a bit about that song?
Sure. Unholy Mass is the first song I think that Rob and I wrote together. Rob did most of the music and I did most of the lyrics, and then we helped each other out a little bit. A couple of riffs in there. I think one riff in particular is my contribution right at the end of the song. And then Rob came in and added a couple lines to the chorus while I was writing it. We have not played it live in a little while, not because we don't love it, because we do, but just because we've had a lot of new material that we're working on. And Colton just joined the band less than a year ago, so we are catching him up with a lot of the old stuff still. I'm looking forward to the next time we do play Unholy Mass for an audience, because I think it's one of the heaviest songs we've ever written. I think the main riff, which I credit entirely to Rob, like that just came out of him, you know, like he just pulled it out of the air. And it's this thing that, like, it's in standard time, but it doesn't sound like it's in standard time. It is in a key, but it sort of like feels like it's warbling in and out. Like it's got all this chromatic stuff, but it still feels like, you know, it still feels like a riff that has a discernible melody to it. And it's really slithery and just kind of evil sounding. The whole song's kind of built around that. And there are some changes, like during the verse riffs, it gets into this much more staccato thing, which goes with the vocal delivery, and it's almost like a more of a Cannibal Corpse thing. Cannibal Corpse was a huge influence on Rob in his early days, and they are, I think, his favorite metal band ever. So it was really nice to sort of like to tap into that territory a little bit. But then with the main riff, it's just this kind of this evil slithery groove that it kind of keeps coming back to. And I think that the push-pull between those, right? The groove on the one hand and then the pounding staccato sections on the other gives it this really unsettling feeling where it's like you don't know when it's gonna grab you and when it's going to let you go. And so to me, like one of the most exciting songs that we have, I think, and I'm really, I don't think I'll ever get sick of playing it.
Right on. And you know what? I have to agree with you. You said something in the last break about, like, you know, the importance of making a song that really like sticks with you, or make it a riff that like you whistle afterwards. This song did it for me as well. The riffs were heavy. They stuck me. I was humming them before the show started. And so I am stoked to play this one. We're going to spin it right away here. And then unfortunately, we do have to wind down the show a little bit. But I do have one more song I want to chat about before we do. And anybody who's listened to the show before knows I'm a sucker for long songs. So I'm stoked to end the show with a nice long song.
We'll be right back.
Background Noise is brought to you by Easy Noise, Alberta's newest booking service for independent musicians and venues. Check them out on Instagram at EZNOIZE. Get connected and make some noise. Now back to the show.
We are back. Thank you so much for listening to Background Noise today. I hope you enjoyed the episode as much as I did. Got some of your thrashing out, got moving around, got kicking stuff. You know, whatever you do when you listen to metal. We just listened to Unholy Mass off of 13 Goats 2022 album, Servants of the Jar. But I want to end the show with one of your newer songs, one of the ones off of the 2024 album, Capricorn Rising. I thought this one would be really good to end the show with because you end your album with it, and it's Animal Kingdom. So why don't you tell me a bit about that song?
Animal Kingdom is a really special song because it's different from anything we've done before. It takes ideas, I think, that come up earlier in our work and brings them to new places. There's clean vocals in it. We have a female guest vocalist come in as well. She shows up twice on Capricorn Rising, and she does a kind of really similar vocal refrain in both places. And it's supposed to sort of bookend the story of the record. The first time you hear her, she's almost like this voice in Shepherd's head who's like egging him on to go and like carry out his war against human civilization. But in the second time you hear her, which is on Animal Kingdom, she's almost like his conscience. And she's almost like getting him to think about the fact that he's just, you know, burned the planet to a crisp, essentially, and sort of left nothing behind, and that whatever good he thought he was going to accomplish with his overthrow of humanity has actually just kind of made him the tyrant and the dictator that he always claimed to hate. And so it's this moment where it's like the consequences of your actions are coming home to roost, and it's like this, you know, it's this literal echo in his head, and he's going, oh shit, like, I'm the monster. The song is a really slow burner. So it starts off with this kind of like creepy, clean intro, this sort of like these arpeggiated chords without any distortion on them. And I'm just like whispering over the top, and I'm whispering in Shepherd's voice about, like, you know, about everything he's accomplished and like the, you know, his way of saving the world. And then as the verses progress, you start to get the sense that he actually has not been fixed by what he's done, that he is still bitter, that he is still angry, that no amount of like bloodshed is going to fix that. And then when the female vocals hit in the back half of the song, you get this moment of like, oh shit, his conscience is killing him, he's losing his mind, and it all sort of builds to exactly that. A really, really special song for us. I think possibly a hint at future directions for the band. Leo wrote the music for this one. Rob came up with this like incredible, creepy, atmospheric solo that comes in about halfway through. The lyrics and the arrangement are me, and the guest vocals are courtesy of Carly Ellen Jones, who is the vocalist that we worked with on Capricorn Rising and who is a good friend of the band.
Right on. We are going to spin that in just a couple minutes. Before we do, though, I saw you got nominated for Metal Artist of the Year. How cool is that?
Yeah, very cool. Western Canadian Music Awards decided to grace us with a nomination for Best Metal and Hard Music Artist of the Year 2025. I'm just beyond honored that we're in the running for it. We are up against some very, very exciting competition. There's Holy Void from out in Manitoba, I believe. There's Art of Attrition from Alberta, who we actually covered for because they were supposed to play a show out here, but their van broke down. And so we ended up hopping on the bill at the last minute to replace them. So I haven't met Art of Attrition, but we do consider them friends. And we are really happy that they're also in this category. There's Torify, who are co-headlining Mosh the Rock Island Metal Festival with us out on Vancouver Island, August 10th, Fred Milne Park in Sook, BC. Thanks to Royalty Entertainment for putting that one together and for making us part of the package. And then there is, of course, Ancients. We are also nominated alongside two-time Juno winners Ancients in the Western Canadian Music Awards this year. That's pretty stiff competition. I'm not saying that I think we're necessarily going to beat out Ancients for the win, but honestly, just to be standing alongside such incredible bands, you know, to be recognized in the same company as all these guys, like, you know, it's incredible to me. Like I said, this band came from very humble beginnings, right? I was an out of work actor going through a divorce, and Rob was a mechanic, and Leo was, you know, a software engineer who only learned how to speak English like, you know, 10 years ago or something. And we just kind of came together and found Colton and decided we wanted to do this band. And now we're at a point where it has become its own thing. You know, it has a life of its own. People who are not just like our friends and our moms are telling us that they appreciate the music we're making. And I think that as an artist, that is kind of the best thing that you can hope for, right? Like money and fame and having your name live in history forever. Like those are things that you all kind of hope for, I think, when you start a band, but you can't control any of those things. What you can control is the relationships you have and the creative work that you make with the people that you love. I love these guys and I love the work that we've done so far and the music that we've made. They are my best friends. I am more proud of the output of this band than I am of probably any creative work that I have done ever in my life, you know, including the television series that I've, you know, had roles on and the work that I trained for so long to do as an actor. But this band, everything we do comes from us. And it's raw and it's authentic. And it's so gratifying to me and to all of us, I think, just that other people are starting to see in it some portion of what we all see. So thank you, you know, for everyone who's out there listening. You know, if you enjoy what you're hearing from the bottom of my heart, thank you for being a part of what we're doing and for supporting our music, because without you, we could not do this.
Amazing. I love that. Thank you so much. Before we spin the last song here, Animal Kingdom, you've kind of hinted to it already. You got so much going on. What should we be keeping an ear or an eye out on you from?
In the future, well, we are working on our third album. We have some ideas about concepts and lyrics. I've definitely started writing in a direction for that. We have about 5 or 6 of the songs like pretty practiced up and ready to play. Just need to put the lyrics on top of them and unify them conceptually. And then do, you know, all the rest of it, right? The artwork and the merch designs and the marketing and the release plan and the music videos. So all of that will happen in time, but I'm very excited about the material that we're putting out currently and the new stuff we're working on. You can catch us at Party in the Park 3, which is happening in September up in Fort McMurray. We are providing direct support for Dwarves at that festival. So that's going to be a lot of fun for us. They're kind of like California punk legends, some ex-Queens of the Stone Age members in there and people from the Palm Desert scene. So for me, because I grew up listening to that music, that's going to be just fucking awesome. And we have 1 or 2 more appearances that I cannot announce on this show at this time, because no official announcement has yet taken place. But keep your eyes peeled. We are a very busy, very committed band. And I think that you can expect stuff to be happening for us throughout the rest of 2025 and into 2026.
Right on. And of course, I'll link you guys in our bio and our caption, as well as the other bands that we played today, so you guys can find them real easily, because this is a band you're going to want to be keeping your eyes and ears on. They play a lot. They put out music. Their music is absolutely stellar. So thank you again, Graham, so much for coming on the show today, talking about these songs and sharing your tunes. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Tora. And thank you, everybody out there, for listening. Hope you enjoy what you hear and keep in touch.
This is Animal Kingdom off of the 13 Goats 2024 album, Capricorn Rising.
Lift your face, dry your tears.
Well, that's all I got for today, folks. Thanks so much for tuning in to Background Noise. I had a blast. And hey, you know what? If you're a Canadian musician as well and you're thinking, I want to be on the show, just click the link in our Instagram bio at Background Noise the Show, and we'll try to set something up.